This is Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast, episode number 129. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. This episode is an interview with Dr. Peter Glidden, part two, titled Killing Us Softly, Vitamins and Other Nutrients, and is being released on Monday, November 21, 2011. My interview with Peter was recorded on Thursday, November 17, 2011. An outspoken advocate of holistic health, Dr. Glidden has lectured to thousands of people over the last two decades. He delivers over 60 free lectures each year and is a regular speaker at Health Freedom Expo and Longevity Regional Meetings. He has appeared on TV, is a regular guest host of the Dead Doctors Don't Lie Health Talk radio program, and gives free weekly seminars all over Chicagoland. His new book, The MD Emperor Has No Clothes, is an eye-opening, groundbreaking, jaw-dropping exposition on the shortcomings of conventional MD-directed medicine and the unrivaled excellence of holistic medical treatments. And Dr. Glidden got his BS from the University of Massachusetts in 1987, his ND from Bastyr University in Seattle, Washington in 1991, and was licensed to practice as a naturopath in 1992. And from 1993 to present, he's had a naturopathic practice. From 1987 to present, he's been a member of the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians. And since 2008, he's been a member of the Illinois Association of Naturopathic Physicians. For more information, go to wallachonline.com and drglidden.com. In upcoming shows, we're going to have Dr. Joel Wallach on next week to continue down this rabbit hole on nutrition that we started here with Dr. Glidden. And I'm not sure who's going to be on after that. I had hoped to have Denise Menger on, but I've not heard back from her to confirm that interview. And donations. This week's episode is dedicated to Patrice, Sarah, Jeremy, Paul. And thanks to Paul for coming through with some much-needed equipment. And also Patrick, Douglas, Arthur, Scott, Samuel, and Marshall. And we still need some more equipment purchases and are still seeking donations for those. If you can help out, please be sure to donate and help us as much as possible with that. And by donating or ordering one of the books or DVDs or the She Who Remembers audio archives or a t-shirt, or getting a membership to the website, or ordering one of the new 3 years of Gnostic Media DVDs, which are still not up yet, please send me an email. I will get that done this week for certain. I apologize again for the delay. Too many things going on. And anyway, we greatly appreciate your support. The views expressed by the authors and guests of this unprogram are their own and are not necessarily those held by myself, the host, or Gnostic Media. You can go to the website at www.gnosticmedia.com. That's GNOSTICmedia.com. You can contact me through the web forum on the website or directly at contact@gnosticmedia.com. Thanks for listening and thank you for your support. And here is my interview with Dr. Peter Glidden, part two. Enjoy. Peter, welcome back to the Gnostic Media Podcast for your second time, and I'm excited to have you back.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure. I really appreciate the forum here. It's a very important thing that we're up to.
And I apologize. We had actually started recording this, and we lost the first 12 minutes, so we're going to have to redo this all, but hopefully we can get it as good the second time as the first time this morning.
Okay, good.
And the reason why I wanted to have you back is after having you on the first time, it caused quite a ruckus, and most people were strongly supporting what you had to say, and even most of those who had things against what you had to say supported most of what you had to say. And I had an MD who contacted me with a points that you had brought up about allopaths being the third cause of death that I wanted to have you address today. Also, I wanted to have you address the attacks on Dr. Wallach and his longevity and the way that he's got that set up for marketing and things like that, and go into Vitamins, which we discussed last time, and overall nutrients, as well as going into ash and things like that that you discussed last time as well.
Yeah. Very interesting stuff. Yeah, happy to help. Happy to help.
So anyway, today I want to give you the floor. I don't really have a outlined list of questions like I did for your first interview, because obviously you don't have a book out yet on this topic. So I just want to really give you the floor and then guide the conversation along the way.
Okay, very good. Very, very good. So first things first, let's talk about the the statement that I made, that medical doctors are the third leading cause of death in the United States. That's not exactly true. What I should have said, well, actually, I said that on purpose, and I did it for a reason, and I'll explain my rationale here shortly. But it's not medical doctors. It's the medical industry. The medical industry in the United States, you know, it's the whole kit and caboodle. It's the hospitals. It's the insurance companies. It's the pharmaceutical companies. It's the phlebotomists. It's the entire industry is the third leading cause of death in the United States. Now, in my mind, you know, that's what I should have said in order to be politically correct. But, you know, I'm a fire starter, and I am, and I unapologetically so. Because, you know, if there was an army that was invading the United States, I could blame the entire thing, or I could encapsulate that invasion by saying that, you know, the president of this country has chosen to invade the United States, and I would be correct. But it's not just one man, it's the whole society that props him up, that's in back of him. So it's not specifically the MDs that are doing it, but it is in fact the de facto medical industry which monopolizes
the allopathic
medical industry, correct, is the third leading cause of death. Now, you know, I have a lot of MDs who are friends. And I went to school with a bunch of them, and we've stayed in contact, and I've met a number of MDs who are holistically oriented and holistically inclined over the years. And medical doctors, some of these people, they're great. They're great human beings. They donate their time to soup kitchens, and they work for Doctors Without Borders, and you know, they have good intentions. However, they have aligned themselves, for better or for worse, and in my mind it's for worse, with an industry which has gone out of its way to put my profession behind bars, with a medical profession and industry which has gone out of its way to monopolize the medical theater in the United States, and they have done it through coercion and money, and it's bad.
So you're saying that we don't have a free medical market system in this country?
No, we haven't since 1920s, after the Flexner Report. Before the Flexner Report, it was a relatively level playing field. We had the allopaths, the MDs, the chiropractors, the osteopaths.
Which we discussed it in the last interview for people who want to go over that. And I did have you read a section out of the beginning of your book in that.
Yeah. It's not the MDs per se, it's the industry. And it's an important thing to understand, because we have lost perspective on this because it is so overarching, right?
Are you able to give any specific numbers to people on the rate of deaths from the allopathic industry and where those deaths might come from?
Yeah, I mean, I can look it up real quickly. I think I might have articulated that in the book. But the easiest way to do that is to do a Google search for Barbara Starfield. Do a Google search for Barbara Starfield, because it was her and, you know, MD deaths. Do Barbara Starfield MD deaths, and it pops right up. That was the JAMA article that, set this whole thing off. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And when you crunch all of the numbers, the allopathic industry in the United States is the third leading cause of death. And it's crazy. It's not only the irony of it is that these are the people that we go to for healthcare. And even though their therapeutics fail, even though we've lost the war on cancer, even though we've lost the war on heart disease, 100 years ago, heart disease was the number one killer. 50 years ago, when we started statin drugs, heart disease was the number one killer. It's the number one killer today. While the MDs have been driving the bus, while the allopathic medical industry has been in charge, let's say it that way, kidney disease is skyrocketing, obesity is skyrocketing, type 2 diabetes is skyrocketing. People have to file bankruptcy because they can't pay for their hospital bills in the United States of America. We are dropping like flies. Why? Because the allopaths have monopolized the medical industry for the last 100 years. They're the only people our insurance pays for. They're the only people that get the research money. They're the only people that work in the hospitals where we live. And they're our only option.
Right. You know, and when I was sick, Peter, and I had a major chronic stomach problem for 13 years that we talked about a little bit last time. But the treatment for my stomach problem, which the 12 doctors I went to here didn't accurately diagnose, but the treatment here, once the doctor in Peru had pinpointed it, would have been about $60,000 to $80,000, including the week or 5 days in the hospital with 2.5 to 3 weeks outpatient care. $60,000 to $80,000, and in Peru, getting the same quality health care, and you know, my doctor trained at Harvard and everything. The total cost of everything, including my stay in the hospital, was about $700 to $1,000.
I know, it's crazy. And that's the other thing, that medicine in the United States is a for-profit industry. It's a for-profit industry, and there's nothing wrong with making money. But when you're engaging any industry that's for-profit, it is a completely different set of rules. It's a completely different relationship than if you're engaging with a not-for-profit. So I just pulled the numbers up. Okay, so here they are. Per year, 106,000 people are harmed by the negative effects of drugs. Killed by the negative effects of drugs. These are properly prescribed medications, and the people die from them. 80,000 people die from infections that they acquire after being hospitalized. 45,000 people die from other errors that happen while they are hospitalized. 12,000 people die from unnecessary surgery. And 7,000 people die from medication errors delivered while they are in the hospital. Right? Now, that's a total of 250,000. 106,000 of which is not from error. It's from the delivery of the medicine.
But aren't you excluding things like insurance companies denying emergency medical care and things like that that would also need to be included?
Yes. I mean, these are just, you know, it's hard to encapsulate all of that information. For instance, nobody knows how many people are harmed or killed from automobile accidents, which were caused by the driver of the automobile being gorked out of their mind on prescription drugs. And not being able to concentrate, not making wrong decisions because they're under the influence of, you know, 8 prescription medicines. So there's a lot of data like this that's impossible to get.
Okay.
Hard numbers.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Peter. I guess in a way, because my best friend committed suicide last December on the solstice because he had a chronic stomach problem like I did. He had been misdiagnosed. And for a stomach problem, his doctor put him on, get this, Prozac. And then he started hearing voices. And his fiance, who is an RN, came home from work one day and found him in the kitchen eating a raw chicken. So although he put a .38 to his forehead and pulled the trigger, it was the allopathic medicine, it was the psychiatrist who prescribed the Prozac who made him start hearing voices in his head, that he called me up 2 weeks before he committed suicide and said, you know what, I should have listened to you about the Prozac. I'm hearing voices. I've lost my mind. There's no point in me living anymore. I'm going to kill myself.
And the doctor didn't go to jail.
And the doctor didn't go to jail. And not only that, his fiance, after the suicide, went to the same doctor to get a prescription of Seroquel to calm her nerves, which was the exact same drug, or actually the doctor put it on Prozac first and then Seroquel second, but she goes to the exact same doctor who did this, who misdiagnosed him, who put him on the Prozac and the Seroquel, who made him hear voices and put a gun to his head and kill himself.
This is how far down the rabbit hole we've gone. This is how far down the rabbit hole we have gone. And so this is why I have no problem saying that it's the MDs who are the third leading cause of death. And it's the industry, but it's the MDs that glue the entire thing together. And they get a pass. Hundreds of thousands of people a year die from their treatments, and we give them a pass. And in addition to that, their treatments don't work for chronic disease. The only thing that allopathic medicine delivers results for is trauma, injury, and some infectious disease. A medical doctor can't even cure heartburn, for goodness sake. But these are the go-to people. These are the people that we go to. And when they screw up, we give them a pass over and over and over and over and over and over and over. It's we've all drunk the Kool-Aid. Right? So this is why I stand up and say, fire your MD. And I don't care if it offends MDs. They should be offended. You know, they should be. These people don't have a conscience, because if they did, they would quit what they did. If they had a conscience, they would quit their industry and they'd become a naturopath or a chiropractor or an herbalist, but they don't. And it incites me to no end, because for the last 23 years, the majority of the work that I have done clinically with my patients is clean up the mess that the allopathic medical industry has created, and I've had it.
Did you hear that the Texas Medical Board has relaunched their attack last week against Dr. Brzezinski?
No, I didn't hear that, but Brzezinski's a real pioneer. I have a patient who went to Brzezinski, and Brzezinski eliminated a brain tumor. I mean, it's gone.
Yeah. Well, get this. Well, you see, Brzezinski had two patients that came to him after receiving allopathic chemotherapy, which completely destroyed these people, and he was unable to save these two patients' lives. So now, even though the allopaths kill who knows how many hundreds of thousands of people with chemotherapy per year, which isn't included in those death totals that we talked about.
Correct.
That is being used against Brzezinski because these two patients died, even though the medical records show that they received the damage from the chemotherapy and radiation before they went to him.
You know, Dr. Wallach, years ago, this was early in his career, he was a witness for the defense, you know, an expert witness for the defense, from a naturopathic physician somewhere in the Carolinas who was being sued for similar things. You know, she was treating a patient for a couple of months and the patient died, and the state board of medicine tried to throw her in jail. And Wallach testified on her behalf and proved that the reason that the patient died was not because of anything that the naturopath did, but as a side effect of the medication that he'd been on for the last 5 years. This, you know, so it's like the fella said, right? History doesn't repeat itself, it rhymes, right? So this is the same thing over and over again. We give these people a pass, and when we criticize them, not even criticizing them, when we just pull back the curtain and show the world what they're doing, just point it out, everybody gets up in arms. And quite frankly, the only people, you know, I've lectured to thousands of people about this information for the last 2.5 years all over the United States. I mean, everywhere. The only place really I haven't been is Alaska or Hawaii. In the continental United States, I've been all over the place. And the only people that have a problem with anything that I say are people that have some skin in the game with the medical industry. You know, they're a pharmaceutical rep, or they're a doctor, or they're an ambulance driver or something, you know. But the only people that have any problem with any of this are people that already have skin in the game. And, you know, we're going to ruffle some feathers. I mean, that's just what happens when you start exposing the truth. The slave owners didn't want to hear that slavery was bad. The people that employed children didn't want to hear that child labor was bad. Well, too bad, so sad. I'm sorry. Somebody has to stand up and call a spade, and quite frankly, I am just the man for the job.
All right, let's get into Youngevity and Dr. Wallach's multi-level marketing plan, why he chose that plan, and Is he in the money stream on that? Let's get into that whole thing and break it down.
Okay, great. So Dr. Wallach, on purpose, decided to set Youngevity up as a multi-level marketing networked company. He did that on purpose. And in order to detract, in order to make himself immune from criticism, he removed himself 100% from the revenue stream of the vitamins. The Youngevity company, which is now FDI Youngevity, could sell $1 billion worth of vitamins next year, and Dr. Wallach would make zero from that. He completely removed himself from the revenue stream of the vitamin sales because he knew that his critics would be saying, oh, that Wallach, he's just trying to make money selling vitamins. Well, guess what? He doesn't make any money selling vitamins. And he set Youngevity up as a multi-level marketing networked business for one reason and one reason only: to change the way that medicine is practiced in the United States and Canada by building a giant coalition, a grassroots coalition of the informed. That's why he did it. Because why did he do it that way? Because the front door to the medical market in the United States is closed and monopolized by the pharmaceutical industry and the allopaths. They control everything. So Wallach did $25,000 of federally funded research, eliminated 900 diseases, chronic diseases in the animal kingdom, started applying those therapeutics with human subjects and got unbelievable results. And knew from his previous experience at Yerkes Primate Research Center, where he did his cystic fibrosis research, that the front door to medicine was closed by the pharmaceutical industry. So, you know, what did he do? He chose to build a grassroots coalition of the informed. You know, he could have sold his vitamins through GNC. He could have sold his vitamins like Andrew Lessing on the Home Shopping Network. He could have set Youngevity up as a direct-to-physician-only high-quality nutraceutical company. I used to work for one of those, the Vital Nutrients. Fantastic vitamin company, but they only sell to doctors. But he didn't. Why did he not do that? Because he is trying to change the way that medicine is practiced. Why? Because we're suffering needlessly in this country. Why? Because the only people we have access to for medicine are MDs, and they have completely dropped the ball. You know, there's less than 4,000 licensed naturopathic physicians in the entire country. Of those 4,000, there are less than 100 that have more than 20 years of clinical experience, and I'm one of them. Dr. Wallach is the most experienced naturopathic physician on the planet. There's 350 million Americans. There is no way that a handful of licensed physicians can service all these people. So what do? Do we just, you know, have a private practice and charge lots of money, you know, have a boutique medical practice and, you know, charge $10,000 for a three-month visit because people would pay that to recover from their arthritis and their type 2 diabetes and their fibromyalgia? No.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned arthritis as well, because my my step-grandmother committed suicide over her arthritis.
Well, you know, welcome to the modern medical Alice in Wonderland, through the looking glass, down the rabbit hole, upside down, inside out, completely backwards world of medicine. This is why we do what we do, because people don't know any better. We have all bet on the wrong horse. And, you know, now here comes Dr. Wallach with the answer. And nobody thinks about this. You know, I don't know where this whole negative concept of MLM started. I really don't know where that started. And quite frankly, I don't get it. Because let's look at it this way. Let's say some doctor somewhere patented of nutritional supplement program that was proven to eliminate type 2 diabetes, right? Patented it and sold it through GNC. So now you've got type 2 diabetes and you go to GNC, and, you know, over the course of a year, you spend $200 a month, that's $2,400 a year, on your type 2 diabetes elimination nutritional supplement from GNC. Well, it's a wonderful thing that your type 2 diabetes is gone, but you've spent $2,400. And at the end of the year, you go to GNC and say, look, I just spent $2,400 this year. What are you going to do for me? The manager of GNC is going to give you what? A coupon for 10% off your next order? Well, guess what? Longevity, Dr. Wallach's company, will pay you. We will pay you to help us spread the message. And people have a problem with this. Apparently, people, you know, like to spend good money after bad.
Wait. Let me ask you this, Peter. How much does it cost to join Longevity?
$10.
$10. Okay, so people can buy it for $10 and then they get a discount off the vitamins, right? And then if they sell more than that, then they get paid for it, right?
Yeah, that's right. And
okay, so now I don't want to sound like I'm trying to sell Longevity at all. I have no affiliation with Longevity. I want to be clear on that. I am not a member. I have not paid my $10, but you know, $10 to join an MLM and you get a discount on your vitamins. That's a pretty good, reasonable deal, in my opinion. But, you know, let me point out to people also, though, real quickly here, Peter, that Herbalife, which is a huge vitamin company that has been around for decades and has a huge skyscraper building on the side of the 405 freeway in downtown LA that I go by all the time, has been there for decades. And a lot of people really like their stuff. So why attack Longevity?
Well, the reason that people attack Longevity is because of Dr. Wallach, because it's a threat. That's the only reason that they do it. And one of there's a scientist. This guy is one of the scientists that nominates people for the Nobel Prize. His name is Gerhard Schrauser. It was Gerhard Schrauser's research on selenium, you know, decades ago that really brought selenium into consideration in the scientific community. Gerhard Schrauser was just nominated by an international committee, and I forget their name, but he was nominated one of the top 10 scientists of all time. Of all time. He's one of the guys that nominates people for the Nobel Prize. Dr. Schrauser's office is at Longevity headquarters, not because he has any affiliation with Longevity, but because he loves Dr. Wallach and Dr. Wallach's method and Dr. Wallach's mission. And Schrauser put together a brilliant piece that debunks the quackbusters. You know, the quackbusters will come along and say, oh, Dr.
Right,
Wallach's research
right
on cystic fibrosis.
And I got to tell you, Peter, at least 10 people posted up that Quackbusters link after I had you on. And I had, you know, and I had already posted up your response to that. And they were still coming in after I posted up your response. So let's go into that.
Yeah, because why is this? Because the Quackbusters are paid. Nobody, you know, people should investigate the Quackbusters, right? Because they're paid in Australia. The Quackbusters are paid by the Australian equivalent of the FDA. It's a paid branch of the government whose job it is to disseminate disinformation against anything that's not mainstream medicine. They're paid to do it. And that guy, Stephen Barrett, here in the United States, who's now being sued by a diagnostic lab in Illinois, Doctors Data, they're suing him for misinformation that he's given. He's also paid by Barrett's paid by the American Medical Association. But these people are not interested in the truth. These people are interested in just bashing everything.
Well, they have an agenda
extreme
to protect.
Yeah, it's an agenda. And, you know, quite frankly, let's look at it this way. If you were a medical professional, if you were an MD, or an osteopathic physician, or even a chiropractor in the United States, and I love chiropractors, and you heard Dr. Wallach lecture, and Dr. Wallach presents all of his research, all of his background, and then gets up in front of the room, and people stand up with testimonials of their own accord and say, you know, before I knew Dr. Wallach, I had sclerosing cholangitis. Before I knew Dr. Wallach, I had congestive heart failure. Before I knew Dr. Wallach, I had osteoporosis and arthritis. Before I knew Dr. Wallach, I was 175 pounds overweight, had fibromyalgia, type 2 diabetes, and high blood pressure. And now it's all gone. And the only thing we did was change my, the only thing I did was change my diet and take nutritional supplements. Don't you think it would be a normal reaction for a medical professional to go, holy crap, you've got to be kidding me.
Well, didn't the allopaths, let me interrupt
you
real quick.
I know what you're doing.
Let me interrupt you real quick. Didn't the allopaths back in the 60s and 70s say that diet didn't matter?
Yeah, it's crazy. And it was the allopaths that killed Dr. Semmelweis, right? Dr. Semmelweis in the 1800s, I think it was, had the audacity. He was an MD. He had the audacity to assert that if doctors washed their hands before they delivered babies, childbed fever would be eliminated. And for that unbelievable gift to humankind, the medical profession, they fired him, they took his license, they blackballed him, and he was found hung to death in his apartment. You know, they called it a suicide, but I don't think it was a suicide. In any event, here's my point. Rather than levying unwanted criticism against a man who makes no money from the sale of his vitamins and who has decided to set up a company which will pay you to help us spread the word and lift your friends and family and church members and community members into health, rather than levying unwarranted criticism against this person, why don't you just try the therapeutics? You know how many medical doctors the patients of whom I've treated over the last 25 years, and you know, we'll treat somebody, the breast cancer goes away, the asthma goes away, the type 2 diabetes goes away, the arthritis goes away, and then they go back to their MD for their next follow-up visit, and the MD looks at the lab work before and the lab work after and scratches his chin and says, oh, I don't know what you're doing, but I want you to keep doing it. You know how many of those people have called me and asked me what my therapeutics were? Zero. If you want to turn a critical lens on somebody, you need to turn it the other way. You need to ask yourself, why are MDs not hounding us for this information? You know, didn't they take an oath? Didn't they take a Hippocratic oath to end human suffering? Baloney.
Well, isn't it true that that the allopaths aren't even required in many universities now to even take that oath?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I know they get...
As far as I know, a lot of them aren't even required to take it anymore.
Yeah, it's just crazy, you know, what we've kind of come to. So, you know, the medical profession has let us down. Not only are their therapeutics ineffective for chronic disease, but they're killing us. And let me make one thing clear, and I hope I made this clear in the first presentation. You know, this is not MDs are bad and naturopaths are great. It's you have to take the right dog out for the hunt. You know, if I want to find a lost child in the Rocky Mountains, I'm not going to bring a Chihuahua. I'm going to bring a bloodhound. Right?
Right, right. Exactly, yeah. You don't want a Chihuahua for that. Yeah,
exactly.
There's a reason why they're called bloodhounds.
So, you know, if you've got trauma, if you need surgery, if you've got a bullet in your arm, if you're fighting a war and you get your leg blown off, if you get a nasty infection someplace, go to the MDs. Because the stuff they can do with appropriate surgery now is unbelievable. Just this side of miraculous. They are really exceptional at that. They are really, really, really good at that. But for everything else, they stink. And not only do they stink, but they're dangerous. So, you know, even though their therapeutics don't work, and their industry is the third leading cause of death in the United States, we go to them.
Thank you for correcting that.
We go to them over and over and over again. And when somebody comes along with a vitamin program, a medical nutritional program that he makes no money from selling and which offers the person who purchases it the opportunity to get the supplements for free and or to make a very nice, healthy residual income, secondary income, we bastardize them. We criticize them unduly.
All right. What is a pyramid scheme?
Well, a pyramid scheme is... it's against the law. Pyramid schemes are recognized by the U.S. Department of Commerce, I think, whatever governmental agency that regulates, you know, finances. Pyramid schemes are against the law. And if any multi-level marketing company was running a pyramid scheme, they'd be in jail. A pyramid scheme is where nothing is sold, nothing of value is sold. You know, the guy at the top of the pyramid scheme encourages investors to give him lots of money for nothing, with the hope of some type of return in the future on their investment for something that's intangible, right? And then he strings all these investors along for 2, 3, 4 years and then runs away with all the money. That's a pyramid scheme, and it's against the law. Multi-level marketing businesses are not pyramid schemes. But, you know, MLMs are like, you know, again, the metaphor of dogs. There's a lot of different types of dog. There's a lot of different multi-level marketing companies that have different compensation plans for their members. You know, some MLMs, it's $1,000 or a $1,500 buy-in. And then every month you have to buy $200, $300, $500 worth of product, regardless of whether you've populated your network with anybody, right? And the compensation plan, the payout plans are different. For instance, Amway. If you dot all your, if you do everything perfectly with Amway, Amway will pay you 38% of what you sell. If you do everything correct with Dr. Wallach's FDI Longevity, you're paid 72%. 72%. And the membership to become a Longevity distributor is 10 bucks. It's a $10 one-time buy-in once. And you don't have to purchase product every month. You, if it profits you to do so, you can. If it doesn't profit you to do so, you can't. Dr. Wallach set FDI Longevity up the way that he set it up to make it very distributor friendly. Now, most MLMs are company friendly. They pay the company first and the distributor second. Longevity pays the distributor first and the company second. Why? Because Longevity was set up for one reason and one reason only. Not to sell vitamins, not to make money. The CEO of Longevity doesn't even draw a salary, for goodness sake. Dr. Wallach set Longevity up to change the way that medicine is practiced in the United States by building a giant coalition of paid. We need, you know, all armies need to be paid. And quite frankly, we're at war. Whether you think we are or not, we are at war. And so, you know, join us. Help us. We need your help.
Now, what about those who say that you can, in fact, if you go out and eat whole foods and everything, you can, in fact, get your nutrition from the food versus what you say that you have to have vitamin supplements? Unless, and let me put a caveat on that, unless you're getting ash in the soil or like the Indians would do, put it in the corn and things like that.
Okay, so the, you know, Dr. Wallach is famous for saying, and I echo his words, that this belief has caused more people to die than all world wars combined. And it is the false belief that you can get all the nutrition that the human body needs from the four food groups. You can't do it. It is impossible. You can't do it. Now, I sent you the link for the 91 essential nutrients that we talked about, right? There's 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, and 3 essential fatty acids. And we have them all, you know, we have the list now for the bean counters in the audience. And that's an important thing. This is an important piece of information to have under your belt. But the lion's share of our nutrient needs are the minerals. 60 of 91, you know, that's almost two-thirds. The problem with minerals is plants can't make them. Animals can't make them. The only place minerals come from is the soil. Or, you know, they're in the water also, but if they're in the water, it's because they washed out of the soil. So the problem with minerals is, you know, like ask anybody who's tried to find gold, minerals exist in veins. They're not evenly spread out over the surface of the planet. So, you know, if you do a bird's eye view of the cornfield, the first row might have 7 minerals in it. The next row of corn might have 12. The next row might have 20. The next row might have 3. The corn only needs 6. You need 60. So you can roll those dice and hope that the soil that your carrot was grown in had all 60 minerals. Or you can just take a supplement that has all 60 minerals. You know, we need to bathe. We need to use soap. We need to live in houses. We need to, you know, cut down trees or, you know, make bricks and make lumber and build dwellings and purify the water and make clothing and wear clothing. We can't just run around like Adam and Eve hoping that God or nature is going to give us everything that we need. That's erroneous. So the same way that we need to do all of these other things in order to make ourselves survive in the phenomenal dualistic universe that we live in, we also must collect, concentrate, and consume all 91 essential nutrients. And if you do not do this, it is only a matter of time until something breaks. And this is, in fact, the cause of all chronic disease, the majority of chronic disease. Your body just runs out of the stuff it needs to keep itself healthy, and something breaks. And then your knucklehead MD blames it on genetics. It's unbelievable.
Now, one person mentioned that they noticed that in your photograph, your hair is grained, so therefore you have a copper deficiency.
They're correct. I do. You should have seen my hair 3 years ago. I mean, it was much worse. And, you know, and look at a picture of me 2 years from now, because I've only been doing this for 2 years. I have only been a student mentoring with Dr. Wallach for 2 years. And, you know, see, it takes a while for these things to come back and come around. But, I mean, look it up. You know, look at – just go to a medical textbook, or even you could probably even source this information online. In order for your body to make pigment, right, melanin, it needs tyrosine and it needs copper. And if you don't have tyrosine, which is an amino acid, or you don't have copper, your body is going to start losing its ability to create pigment. It's not rocket science, and I'm not making this stuff up. But here's a better question, and this is, you know, a more appropriate thing to talk about, because really all of the things that we have to argue, these are all academic. You know, it's like trying to convince somebody that 2 + 2 = 4. Well, you know, after a while I get tired of that, because if they're not going to believe it, then I don't really care. There are other things that we should be talking about here. For instance, there are 147 diseases that we're aware of that are caused by a calcium deficiency, right? 147. Now, I could have quintuplets. You know, they all have exactly the same, identical quintuplets. They could exactly the same genes, exactly the same genes, right? And they all grow up in the same environment. They all eat the same food. And each of them could have a calcium deficiency, but they would all manifest it differently, probably. You know, this one would get high blood pressure, and this one would get bad teeth, and this one would get chronic low back pain, and this one would get arthritis, and this one would get ringing in the ears or high blood pressure. And these are all calcium deficiency diseases, but we don't know why. In this person, you know, it shows up as high blood pressure, and in this person, it shows up as, you know, chronic low back pain. Or
well, because it would have to be, you know, they could be consuming different food. Well, then I guess not if they're in the exact same environment, or, you know, and not all children would eat the same amount of foods. One is eating the lead paint. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It's an interesting phenomenon. But, you know, these are the things we should be having conversations about rather than, you know, is Glidden a quack? I mean, give me a break. Yeah. And you know, look, don't get me wrong. I appreciate this forum, and I appreciate the stand that you're taking for, you know, information dispersal in the United States. And I get what you're up to, and I get what your audience is up to. And ladies and gentlemen, you know, it's time we put the nonsense arguments behind us and start getting into the thick of it, because we are dropping like flies here for no reason, other than lack of knowledge, right?
Well said. And, you know, the quote at the top of my website says, and let me just pull that up here real quick. The Buddha was right when he said that the cause of all suffering was ignorance. We all suffer when there is only one who is ignorant among us. Let us all learn as one. So, all right. So we've covered the copper thing. We've covered a little bit about the vitamins, and I want to come back to the vitamin issue in a lot more length in a little bit. But what I want to go into, and we kind of messed up the last time, we forgot to cover the good foods and bad foods.
Oh, yeah, so, holy smokes, yeah.
Nope. We need to cover that, and sorry, everybody, that had your pens and pencils out waiting for that list. Here it comes right now. So let's go for the good foods first.
Okay, well, the good it's easier to do the bad foods first, because it's
All right, let's do the bad foods.
Okay, it's a short list, and then everything besides that is a good food. All right. So now, if you can't write this down quick enough, go to drglidden.com, and it's on the front page as a PDF. It's called Good Food, Bad Food, and it's free. Okay, so here it is. These are the bad foods. Wheat, barley, rye, and oats. And we don't like these foods because wheat, barley, and rye have gluten in them. And gluten, of course, is the protein that's in wheat, barley, and rye. The protein that's in oatmeal is not gluten. It's this long biochemical name, right? But you don't need to know what it is. But the oatmeal equivalent of gluten is bad for you. And these foods are bad for you because the gluten protein is an extremely complex architectural structure made out of linked daisy-chained amino acids. All proteins are amino acids linked together, right, in complicated structures. It is your stomach's job to break the bonds between those individual amino acids, releasing the amino acids, because amino acids are essential nutrients. That's why we need to eat protein, to secure the amino acids. But the bonds that exist, which hold the amino acids of gluten and the protein in oatmeal together, are extremely difficult for your stomach to break down. Everything has to be exactly perfect, and your stomach acid has to be extremely strong and acidic. Most people, it's not. So what happens? You eat wheat, barley, rye, or oats, and you get this gigantic architectural confabulation of amino acids undigested, passing from your stomach to your small intestine. And that's your small intestine's job to absorb nutrients. That's its function. And it does that through tissue called villi and microvilli. The villi and the microvilli reach out and grab the molecules of food that your stomach has digested and that your intestinal tract has continued to digest and transport them into the bloodstream. Fantastic mechanism. But instead of individual amino acids floating through the intestinal tract, now you've got this giant architectural confabulation of undigested amino acids. It's kind of like trying to have a vacuum cleaner suck up a string of pearls rather than just one pearl. It's going to mess it up. Well, that's exactly what happens. So when you eat wheat, barley, rye, and oats, imagine that. The naturopath is telling you to stop eating whole grains. Stop eating oatmeal.
Let me interject something here. A friend of mine, he's a professor out here. He also used to have a naturopath practice up in Northern California. He sends me this note on the wheat issue, if I may. And he says, I get into human variation and diet in my physical anthropology class. In fact, our overall health has gone downhill since the advent of sedentary agriculture about 10,000 years ago. We have cut back on the varieties of food. We consume less fiber. We tend to eat all of the food groups at the same meal, as suggested by the totally ignorant people who run the FDA and the USDA, which is guaranteed to cause digestive problems as a person ages. There are only two food groups, and they have to be consumed separate from one another. That is, dense protein, all fish, meat, pork, lamb, poultry, eggs, and everything else. Dense protein should be eaten by itself. Beans and legumes are not considered dense protein. None of the studies on wheat have ever taken into consideration that when you eat wheat bread with dense protein, chicken, beef, etc., one can't be sure if wheat is really the problem. Perhaps it is the putrid protein, because the dense carbohydrates interfere with the digestion of the meat. In short, if the researcher does not understand how our digestive system works, then the conclusions drawn from the studies are usually flawed.
Spot on. You know, and that's an excellent observation, which Dr. Wallach understood by working with animals. Because when you're doing research with animals and nutrition, for instance, every animal, you know, every guinea pig that you're working with gets a little pellet, a nutritional pellet that has all of the 91 essential nutrients that they need appropriate for their body weight in there. They've got it. So it's a level playing field, right? And then if you're trying to determine the impacts of, you know, wheat on that animal, then when every single guinea pig is completely nutrified, and then you throw in wheat, just wheat, all by itself, not wheat plus beans plus legumes plus protein, just wheat, then you can see what the reactions are. Or if you're trying to test for vitamin E, like Edward, right, you would withdraw the vitamin E or give more.
Is this why Europeans always eat their salad at the end of the meal rather than at the beginning?
Well, it's probably has a lot to do with it. And it, what all of this means is that rather than pouring, you know, millions and billions of dollars into pharmaceutical research, we really need to have an educated group of people with no agenda, no financial agenda, right? You know, subsidized by some government organization or philanthropic organization that has no political agenda, figure all this stuff out. The same way that we need to figure the cancer thing out. You know, we're giving research money to the wrong people. So, you know, there's a lot going on here with the whole grain thing. And by the way, the wheat, barley, rye, and oats of today are not the same wheat, barley, rye, and oats that they were eating, you know, in Pharaoh's time. It's right. Monsanto's monoclonally hybridized wheat. There's a big difference.
And I want to say real quick that Professor Rush, or Dr. Rush in this case, he happens to be the ND who was the only one who gave me the proper diagnosis and had me give that diagnosis to the MDs. So technically, Rush saved my life.
You got to love that. And you know, we do, because of the nature of the society that we live in, and because, you know, nobody's listening to us, and because everybody goes to the MDs instead, and because everybody's suffering, and because we need to help as many people as we can, we make blanket statements like this. You know, it's probably more accurate to say that, well, probably realistically, it's about 75% of Caucasians that have a problem with wheat, barley, rye, and oats. And it's about 85% of African Americans that have a problem with wheat, barley, rye, and oats. You know, but rather than roll those...
What about Asians? They would have an even higher problem with it, wouldn't
you? You would think that. Yeah, but I haven't seen those numbers yet, so I can't say. But, you know, rather than roll those dice, we say, just don't eat the stuff. And so to complete the, you know, the explanation of this, the undigested protein chain, complex protein architectural chain, as it tumbles through the intestinal tract undigested, destroys the villi. That's why these foods are a problem, because they destroy the very tissue in the body which is absorbing nutrients. Now, I want you to consider something. Autism is skyrocketing now. It's going up a lot. In the same time that grain consumption has increased by 65%.
As well as vaccines, as Dr. Wakefield has proved.
All right. So the average teenager now eats 6 bowls of cereal a day. 6 bowls of cereal a day. The average United States teenager eats 6 bowls.
6 bowls
of
a day.
Whole grain cereal, right?
Wow.
And autism and, you know, all these chronic diseases are on the rise now. And somebody came out with a research study that was published a couple of months ago, which predicts that the generation that's being born right now is going to be the shortest lived generation. And, you know, since,
well, if it, you know, I've emailed you a little bit on this on the side, that I think this is all really and I've done a lot of research on this, and I can provide more information, but my shows and my partner, Richard Andrew Grove, who runs the Tragedy and Hope website, we've already shown a lot of evidence that there is, in fact, a eugenics program going on to lower the population. And if you factor in vaccines, if you factor in the wheat and the low-fat diets and telling everybody to switch to these vegan diets where they can't reproduce and their sex hormones don't function and all of these things. And you factor in this geoengineering with these airplanes spraying stuff on our heads all the time. You put all of these things together and you can see that, yeah, you know, I think it was intentional for this generation to be the shortest lived in history.
Well, that's a scary thought. Seeing the amount of pain and suffering, you know, I've been in the trenches, man, for 23 years doing primary care, naturopathic medicine. And you wouldn't believe the things. Well, you would believe. I mean, you're two examples of, you know, was it your best friend who shot himself, and was it your grandmother with the arthritis, or your mother?
Right.
Right?
Right.
So you have firsthand experience of this, but most people don't. So I would I'd be leaning towards your point of view more and more, because there's something going on here. Right.
Right. And, you know, and if you think of what they're doing to Dr. Brzezinski, they clearly, it's not just a profit motive. And you have this character by the name of, you know, this billionaire Bill Gates guy who is on TED Talks in February 2010 bragging about how he was going to lower the world population by 10% using vaccinations. Now, if you get in and you start studying his history and you pull in Clint Richardson's work and his Lethal Injections documentary, it's laid out exactly how these people are doing this stuff. And, you know, why would Bill Gates, this computer mogul, why would he be on TED Talks bragging about lowering the world population through vaccinations? And when you look into his history, you discover that his father was one of the founders of Planned Parenthood. And then if you do research into Planned Parenthood, there's this documentary called MAAFA 21, M-A-A-F-A 21, the number 221. And that documentary proves that beyond any doubt, the Planned Parenthood is a eugenics program. And they show the documentation to back that up. So I'm just putting all of these things together and seeing this bigger picture. I have all these pieces that fit into this puzzle. And when I put the pieces together, it looks like eugenics to me.
Well, you know what Benjamin Franklin said?
What's that?
He said, gentlemen, and you know, for this audience, it would be ladies and gentlemen, we better hang together, because if we don't, most assuredly, we will hang alone.
Well, you know that Franklin was, I hate to throw out the word Illuminati, but he was one. So that's a whole other story we can go into another time. But, you know, so we've covered.
All right. So I'm only halfway through my bad
right,
food list.
Exactly. Okay. We've only covered four of the bad foods. So let's get into the others.
Okay.
Here.
So wheat, barley, rye, and oats are gone. So the alternative, of course, would be anything gluten-free. Except gluten-free oats, because remember, it's not the gluten that's in the oat, it's the protein that's in the oat, and oats are marked gluten-free if they're manufactured in a gluten-free factory, okay?
Okay.
So, no oats, no wheat, no barley, and no rye. You can have gluten-free bread, gluten-free crackers, gluten-free cookies, gluten-free pizza crust.
Is there any bread that tastes good that's gluten-free? They make this manioc bread and stuff, yeah. And I've yet to find anything that doesn't taste like dirt.
Yeah, Udi's gluten-free bread tastes good if you toast it. And, you know, we're working on recipes, because this is a big problem, and that's an excellent question, and you've hit a nerve there, because everybody asks the same thing, right? But, you know, because gluten, one of the things that gluten lends to flour is elasticity. And when you remove gluten, you remove the elasticity, and so you get these dense flours that, you know, bake up like bricks. And so I'm telling you, if somebody in the listening audience who is, you know, culinarily adept, I don't even know if that's a word, right? Culinarily. Yeah, it's easy for you to say, right? If you could figure out a recipe for gluten-free bread that actually tastes good, you'll be, you know, a millionaire in a month.
And please contact us so that we can share that information with others as well.
Yeah.
And, well, let's do this. Let's hit the fried foods. And I want to have you, you know, distinguish, fried foods cooked in lard and butter versus fried foods cooked in oil as well.
Okay, good. So if you were to draw a line from the Mason-Dixon line south through the old Confederate states, that part of the United States, the people who live in that section of the country, live 10 to 15 years shorter, less than everybody else. They are the shortest lived people in the United States for one reason and one reason only. In the old South, they fry everything. It's just part of their culture. I mean, go to the South. You'll see what I'm talking about. Yeah, I've lectured down there, and I get up in front of the group, and I say, you people would fry water if you could, and everybody laughs, because it's true. It's just a cultural thing, you know? They fry everything, and if fried food, and by doing so, they shorten their lifespan by 10 years. So if you want to increase your lifespan, you don't have to exercise, you don't have to take vitamins, you don't have to do yoga, you don't have to do anything. Just stop eating fried foods. And you'll add 10 to 15 years to your life, because when you fry protein or a carbohydrate, the intense heat of the fryolator creates a chemical called acrylamide, A-C-R-Y-L-A-M-I-D-E, acrylamide. Acrylamide is incredibly carcinogenic. It is so bad. I think it's Sweden. Don't quote me on that. It's some country in Northern Europe is considering legislation which would put warning labels on fried food the same way we put it on cigarettes here in the U.S. That's how bad it is, right? So when you consume anything that's cooked in superheated oil, you are eating carcinogens. So don't do that. It's bad.
And of course, that is separate from the lard and butter and things like that,
yes,
correct?
Yes, because it is the heat, the intense heat, plus the free radicals that are created from the heated oil, which create the acrylamide. So if you cook, you can fry up or you can cook a piece of fish in a skillet in butter or lard, because you can't make that butter or lard so hot that acrylamide forms. So, you know, you can cook eggs in butter. You can use lard on the stovetop because you can't heat that so much that it creates the acrylamide, so that we have a pass for that.
And I got to tell you that, you know, and I've got a friend who lives a few blocks from me as well as myself, and I've been meaning to do this for quite some time, but this last week we finally went out and bought a block of lard and we started using it, you know, and it tastes fine. It doesn't stink up the house. You know, that was one of the advertising campaigns to not use lard originally, was, oh, it won't stink up the house. But you know what? I didn't notice it spilling up the house any more than olive oil or corn oil or anything else. No. And it tasted fine. It actually tasted great. And I had a lot of energy after eating it.
Well, this is why, according to the World Health Organization, the French people in France are the second healthiest nation in the world. Because they cook with butter and lard and cream and salt. You know, they don't use a whole lot of oil in their cooking, you know, the way that, you know, we do in the South and that other countries do. And they're the second healthiest nation in the world, and that's in large part why. So, you know, butter's good for you. Salt is good for you. Lard is good for you. Now, the only foods in my good food list that we consider mandatory are butter and salt. You don't have to do the lard thing if you don't want to, but it tastes great, and you're going to, you know, so learn.
It really does.
French chef, and
everybody
will love you.
Everybody in the audience who's wincing over using lard, just go buy a block at the grocery store, and if you can find one of the Mexican grocers, and they carry a better quality of manteca than the regular grocery store. The Farmer John's does have BHT in it. But if you can find, you know, the Mexican markets have another brand that doesn't have any additives and things in it, and it's just pure lard. So if you can find that, use that. But it tastes great. So get over the fear of it.
And the only caveat with lard is sometimes Crisco is not lard. Crisco is vegetable oil. Okay. So
yes,
not the same thing.
And that is the worst, most toxic hydrogenated vegetable oil you can put in your body. So don't confuse the two. In fact, Crisco was designed as a chemical substitute for lard.
That's interesting. And when you purchase lard, read the ingredient label and make sure there are no nitrates added. Sometimes they add nitrates to lard. So,
right. So what? Yeah, watch the BHT less of a factor, and nitrate's the biggest factor.
And so that's another thing that we recommend people avoid. And I'll come back to the oil thing in a second. But nitrates. Nitrates are added as preservatives to meat to keep them from, you know, turning gray in the deli shelf and looking like cadaver, right. So nobody's going to eat it, right? So the problem with nitrates is when they're heated, they form a chemical called a nitrosamine, which is carcinogenic. So you can have bacon if you're a meat eater, but just get your bacon without nitrates added to it,
sure.
And life is good.
Sure.
All right. Now,
and bacon makes you, you know, and that's another thing I want to say is if you eat your bacon in the morning, you're going to be powered for half the day, and it really gives you a lot of energy. And if the less you cook the bacon, the more energy you're going to get out of it.
What I was at one of the first lectures I ever saw Dr. Wallach give, he was talking about the longevity thing, right? And how, you know, we have the genetic potential to make it to 120, but we don't even get close to that in the United States, right? But there are some cultures that do. And he pulled up a slide, I think it's about a 10-year-old slide. The longest-lived man in the United States was an African-American guy living in the swamps in Mississippi. He died, I think, like 105 years old, right? He lived through a remarkable amount of presidents. I mean, this guy's life story was awesome. And one of the little paragraphs, you know, in his obituary, it said that he prided himself on a diet of lard sandwiches, right?
Oh, wow.
This guy was eating lard sandwiches and lived to be 105 years old. Go figure.
Well, there you have it, right. You know. All right, so let's get back to the oils. Salad, cooking oil, salad oil,
yeah, so
olive oil.
Again, this is along the same lines of, you know, a kind of a broad brush prohibition. The same way that we have a broad brush prohibition against wheat, barley, rye, and oats, we have a broad brush prohibition against oil in a bottle. And that's right, olive oil, extra super duper virgin olive oil harvested by Trappist monks under a full moon while they're chanting, from our point of view, is is bad. Okay? Why? Because after a time, the oil being exposed to air oxidizes.
Now, what about olive oil being monounsaturated versus the others being polyunsaturated?
You know, that is a topic of nutrition that I don't have the biggest. I don't have a big background in that. I'm not
okay.
Gonna,
so,
not gonna
and I was thinking about. I was thinking about finding an oil expert to get into that exact issue because a lot of people are divided over the olive oil, the hemp oil, the flax oil, and do we use it, do we not use it? So I think we really need to do more grammar on this topic and really get down to the bottom of this whole issue. And I think it's a really an important one because we really need to find out once and for all if hemp oil and olive oil and these things are good or bad, because olive oil generally has a lot of omega-3. So,
well, we need to keep it all in perspective, right? Because remember, the essential fatty acids are essential nutrients and we need them. So we need a certain amount of oil in the body. They're essential nutrients, and there are some sources of EFAs that are better than others. And in my opinion, hemp oil is almost the perfect combination or a ratio, right, of omega-3, 6, and 9. I can't say enough about it. And if you put hemp oil or a super-duper extra virgin olive oil harvested by Trappist monks under a full moon or canola oil or vegetable oil or any other oil in a bottle, after a time, it oxidizes, and nobody knows, you know, there's no little, they should put dye or something in it so that you can tell gone, right? But they don't.
Here's my idea, Peter, and I'm just going to put this out there, even though I wanted to patent this idea and make it my thing, but maybe somebody out there will, you know, we'll take this idea and run with it and maybe give me a finder's fee or something for it. But what we need is just like they have for wine bottles to pump the air out of the wine to get the oxygen out so it stays good an extra couple of days, invent one of those pumps for the olive oil bottles so that, you know, you can, you know, and is, you know, say put a date on it, you know, you open it on this day that you have a week to use it. And as long as you're using that pump every day, you'll help keep the oxygen out of there, and it might stay good for, you know, this period.
Refrigeration will also help in that regard. To knock down the conversion into
it. And it sure makes olive oil look funny when you do that.
Yeah, it certainly does, right? Now, the problem is, of course, when you heat an olive oil, even if you don't superheat it in a friolator, it oxidizes really relatively quickly.
And you can smell it.
Yeah. So, now, remember, oils are, you know, essential fatty acids are essential to the human diet. So, Dr. Wallach, in his wisdom, put his essential fatty acid, the longevity essential fatty acid, into gelatin capsules, which are the oil is injected into the capsule in a nitrogen chamber, so that if any air or any gas gets into the capsule, it's nitrogen and not oxygen. So the longevity's essential fatty acid nutritional supplements are unoxidized. And they're in little gelatin caps, and it's genius. And there's only three companies that do that I'm aware of. And Wallach started doing it, you know, 15 years before everybody else. So he's always – that's one thing I love about Dr. Wallach. He's always ahead of the curve, always. Okay? So that's the deal with the EFAs. If you're going to – from my point of view, unless you're, you know, vacuuming the air out of the olive bottle and – being really diligent with that, and I would only buy a small bottle, right, at a time. But then again, you don't know how long it's been on the shelf and where it was shipped from and under what conditions, right? So you are rolling the dice. So just the same way that, you know, 25% of Caucasians and 15% of blacks may not have a problem with wheat, barley, rye, or oats, you probably are going to. And so we recommend with a broad brush, just stay away from oil. Just stay away from it. Just stay away from it. Use butter instead, and life is good. Okay, so we did wheat, barley, rye, and oats. We did fried food. We did oil. We did nitrates in meat. The next thing, there's two more things, and they're in the same category.
Well done meat. We forgot that one.
Yeah, that's it. It's well done meat and the skins of baked potatoes, yams, and sweet potatoes. That's right. The skins of baked potatoes, yams, or sweet potatoes. If you boil the yam, baked potato, or sweet potato, you can eat the skin. But if it's baked, you can't. And it's the same with red meat.
And everybody I know loves to eat the skins on those things.
I know.
So that was a real killer.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? It's really just crazy. And
everybody was told as children, eat the skin. It's good for you.
Yeah, that's where the vitamins are, right?
Right.
So when the red meat is cooked through and through, and when the skin of the potato, yam, or sweet potato becomes baked in the high temperature, there's a chemical that's created called a heterocyclic amine, which is carcinogenic. You know those grill marks on your steak, those black marks? Those are all heterocyclic amines. So if you're going to eat a steak, you're going to cook a steak on the grill, wrap it in aluminum foil. And there is no relationship between aluminum and Alzheimer's, folks. It doesn't exist. And I can riff on
what,
that.
So that's another thing that I wanted to ask you. I'm so glad that you brought that up because I forgot to put that on my list. And you do have aluminum on your list, along with arsenic, which I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah.
But everybody thinks that aluminum is related to Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease because of the sodas and all of this stuff. But you're saying that it's related to the statin drugs and the low cholesterol diet.
Yeah, that's correct. Aluminum, that whole thing that aluminum causes Alzheimer's was started because of a research publication that was, you know, a research study that was published in a medical journal. And the researchers were doing sections of brain tissue of people that were diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And by the way, you cannot diagnose Alzheimer's unless it's postmortem. The only way a definitive diagnosis of Alzheimer's can be reached is through postmortem, or is through examination of brain cells. And you're not going to do that in a living person. So you can only diagnose Alzheimer's once the person's dead and you cut the head open and look at the brain under a microscope, right? So these guys were doing that. And they were doing all these different analyses of the sections of brain tissue. And what they found was a remarkably high level of aluminum in these tissue cultures from Alzheimer's patients, in which they ran with and published. And everybody went, oh my God, aluminum is bad, aluminum oxide and deodorant, aluminum pans, oh my God, aluminum is the Antichrist, right? A month later, after they published it, one of the lab techs realized that the petri dishes that they were culturing the tissues or examining the tissues on were made from aluminum. And it was aluminum leaching off of the media that they put the tissue cultures on that was the cause of the aluminum. So they redid the entire battery of experiments with a non-aluminum media, and there was no aluminum in the tissue, in the brain tissues. It was none. And, you know, so they retracted their statement. I don't know if anybody's ever, like, actually sat down and read a medical journal, but they put the retractions way in the back in these little tiny sure. paragraphs that nobody pays any attention to. So even though in the next issue of that journal, they retracted the whole aluminum thing, nobody paid any attention to it, and we've been running with this false notion ever since. That aluminum has nothing to do with Alzheimer's, nothing. Aluminum is an essential nutrient. Arsenic is an essential nutrient. As a matter of fact, the more...
But arsenic is a poison also, so how does that work?
It's the same way that oxygen works. You know, oxygen is a poison if you do too much of it. You know, I mean, talk to any scuba diver.
Right. Well, I guess, you know, water, what do they call that? The number of people that die from too much water every year, like 200 people in the U.S. die from drinking too much water every year.
Yeah, you know, there's...
Which is way more people than have ever died in history from pot.
I know. Welcome to our nutty world, man. I mean, it's crazy. So, you know, a little bit of aluminum, a little bit of lead. You know, lead is necessary for the chromosomal production. I mean, lead is you need lead to make reverse RNA, and you need.
But you don't have it listed on your list of essential nutrients, though.
I think lead is there, isn't lead there?
No, it's not.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm reading it. You have aluminum, arsenic, barium, beryllium, boron, bromine, calcium, carbon, cerium, cesium, chloride, chromium, cobalt, copper, dysprosium, erbium, europium, gadolinium, and I'm just going to read these through because I know somebody's going to ask me, why didn't you read all of these? So gallium, germanium, gold, hafnium, holmium, hydrogen, iodine, iron, lanthanum, lithium, lutetium, magnesium, manganese,
molybdenum.
Thank you. Neo. nickel, niobium, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus. Oxygen is necessary? Are you sure?
I'm kidding.
Right. Imagine that. Potassium, praseodymium. I'm slaughtering half of these. Yeah. You want to read that last column?
Yeah, rhenium, rhenium, rubidium, samarium, scandium, selenium, silica, silver, sodium, strontium, sulfur, tantalum, terbium, thulium, tin, titanium, vanadium, ytterbium, yttrium, zinc, and zirconium. Yeah, you're right.
Isn't tin a mixture of other metals, though?
It might be. It probably is. But I know that lead is necessary for chromosomal replications. I'm going to have to
run that. What about the lead paint and the studies that show that lead in the gasoline used to cause inner city people to go crazy?
Well, that's just it's too much, right? I mean, it's just an exposure issue. And there's something that, you know, the biochemical community calls the LD50. It stands for...
Well, yes, exactly. The lethal dose, 50%.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there's an LD50 for calcium, right? There's an LD50 for oxygen. There's an LD50 for everything. And too much sunlight will kill you, for goodness sake, right? I mean, if you're adrift on a raft in the Pacific Ocean, the sun's going to kill you.
You know, I forgot, we should mention really quick, one of the last bad foods that we did not mention was soda pop. Just so everybody, that's off the list, that's the nine, that's soda pop.
Okay, so soda pop is problematic for two reasons. Number one, any carbonated beverage, I don't care what it is, I don't care if it's Perrier, sparkling water, okay? The carbonation is carbon dioxide, that's what it is. And carbon dioxide, when poured into the human stomach, neutralizes stomach acid. Now, if you, so the worst, one of the worst things anybody can do is wash down a meal with a sparkling beverage. You know, wash down a meal with Perrier or with a Coke. I don't even like to have champagne before a meal because the bubbles will neutralize stomach acid and that will upset the digestive process, and that's not a good thing, right? So if you want to drink soda pop, drink it between meals when the pH of your stomach is irrelevant, okay? However, the other thing that soda pop does, well, there's two other things. You know, there's a massive amount of sugar in most soda pops, and there's nothing wrong with sugar. It's the amount of sugar that's the problem, okay? But even...
Right, and well, and in corn syrup, but I guess there's new studies coming out showing that corn syrup isn't more toxic, but on the other side of that, my nephew, if he has anything with GMO corn syrup in it, he immediately breaks out in a very bad rash.
Yeah, so that's an allergic reaction, which is separate and distinct from a problem with too much sugar, right?
Right. Well, and he has no problem with real sugar. It's just the high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, you can only have an allergic reaction to a protein, right? You can't have an allergic reaction to a sugar or to an individual amino acid. You can only be allergic to proteins, which is an interesting thing to talk about. But in any event, the other real big bugaboo with soda pop is the phosphoric acid. Because when phosphoric acid becomes digested, it's acid, right? And it...
Where is the phosphoric acid in the soda pop?
Well, it's an ingredient.
It is?
Oh, yeah. Now look okay. At a Coca-Cola label. It's phosphoric acid. Most of them have phosphoric acid in them, right?
What about these natural high-end sodas that are getting popular these days?
Probably has phosphoric acid in it. You can read the label, though, right?
Okay.
So the phosphoric acid pushes your blood towards the acidic end of the spectrum. Now here's another cultural myth, all right? Everybody will tell you you need to alkalinize this and alkalinize this, need an alkaline diet, and it's nonsense. And they're half right. And here's the real deal with alkalinization. Your body has six buffering systems that it uses to maintain a very tight control on the pH of your blood. It is impossible for you to force your blood pH to become too acidic or too alkaline. You cannot do it. If it goes either way, you go into a coma. You cannot do it because there's six buffering systems which prevent it. However, if, like the Inuit Eskimos, the modern-day Inuit Eskimos, you're eating an extremely high-protein diet and a high-sugar diet, and that's all that you're eating, those, which is referred to as an acid-forming diet, right? When you're consuming foods or beverages like phosphoric acid that push your body towards the acidic end of the spectrum all of the time, your buffering systems are activated all of the time. And three of the buffering systems involve minerals. So, you know, you eat an acidic diet, it pushes your blood towards the acidic end of the spectrum, the buffering system kicks in, and you suck minerals out of your mineral stores. That's not good. So your body dumps the minerals like calcium and magnesium into the bloodstream to neutralize the acid, you know, to keep you alive and conscious. Well, what happens is you eat a diet that's acidic all of the time, you're going to waste your mineral reserves. And so the Inuit Eskimos, you know, they're 20 years old. They have the osteoporosis of a 70-year-old because every time they eat, their bones are losing minerals. And unlike their ancestors who used the whale skeleton, and, you know, they roasted and pulverized the bones and put the bone meal in their food, they don't do that. And so, you know, their ancestors were getting remineralized, but they're not. So this is the problem with anything that forces the body towards the acidic end of the spectrum. Your body will bring it back into a little bit.
Right, and calcium neutralizes acid.
Yeah, so a number of minerals will. Your body has so much calcium normally that that's its first go-to. But over time, that sets up a calcium deficiency and, you know, multiple mineral deficiencies, and then it's game over. And then, you know, your joints start to go, your bones start to go, your cognitive process starts to go, your blood pressure starts to spike, your heart starts beating funny, not because you have a bad gene, but because you've been drinking soda pop. and eaten meat with breakfast, meat with lunch, and meat with dinner, and you haven't been taking your minerals. Now, if you take your minerals, you can be a healthy carnivore. If you nutrify your body with all 91 essential nutrients, you can be a healthy vegetarian or a healthy vegan as long as you're staying away from wheat, barley, rye, and oats.
Now, somebody raised the point last week when we were talking about being able to supply the cholesterol the fats lacking in a vegan diet with hemp oil. And somebody said, well, you can't get the cholesterol necessary from hemp seed no matter how you try. Now, how hard you try, you're still going to need some sources of cholesterol.
Yeah, again, that's a little bit outside of my bailiwick. But, you know, your body, your liver can make 20% of your, can supply 20% of the cholesterol needs of your body. Right.
So then what we were saying last week then might possibly be incorrect and we should still eat butter or something to make up for the rest of that 80%.
Yeah, it's entirely possible that, you know, if you're going to be, a lacto-ovo vegetarian or a complete vegan, that you're going to be deficient in cholesterol, which wouldn't be good.
Okay.
Right.
So, yeah, I just wanted to make sure that we hit that again and not leave a hole there because that was something that somebody brought up. So, let's go back for just a second. I'm just going to read the list of good foods real quick so that that is covered. And then what I want to do is use the rest of the time to focus on vitamins and the vitamin industry.
Oh, yeah, very good. Yeah, good.
All right, so here's the good foods. Eggs, soft, scrambled in butter, soft, boiled, poached. Butter, salt, dairy, fish, chicken, pork, lamb. And, of course, the Jews out there aren't going to like the pork or the lard. Lamb, beef. Veggies, fruit, mixed salted nuts, no peanuts, which I thought was interesting. Why no peanuts?
Because there's a fungus that grows on peanuts called an aflatoxin, which is it's not good. It wastes vitamin A from your system and can lead to all kinds of problems.
All right. Nut butters, excluding peanuts, I assume, excluding peanut butter?
Correct.
All right. Rice, millet, pure buckwheat, which is not wheat.
Yep.
Beans, couscous, quinoa, corn, and I thought this was interesting. You had coffee on the safe list.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah,
I would say in moderation because I know people that way outdo that and hurt themselves with it.
For sure.
And tea, green tea, of course, which is very high in antioxidants. Red wine, and then 4 ounces to 8 ounce glass of filtered water, or 4 to 8 8 ounce glasses of filtered water each day. Avoid soft plastic bottles, and then of course, as we already mentioned, lard.
Right. Yeah, so there, it's a good list. So you can, you can. So the moral to this story is become a French chef. Just don't eat the bread. And you're gonna be the most popular person in your neighborhood, let me tell you.
Now, here's a thing that somebody brought to my attention the other day that was on the Winston Price Foundation website. Now, what they're saying is that, like with soy products, if you ferment the soy is edible. The Japanese, they don't use unfermented soy. That's a new thing that's been imported here. And they were saying that if we consume things like sourdough bread where the wheat has been fermented, that it can be digested. What's your thought on
that? Well, that's a very interesting thing. And I did a lot of lecturing in Utah and Nevada in the last couple of years, and there's of course a big coalition of Mormons there. And one of the things in the Mormon tradition, which I, quite frankly, I really like about their, philosophy, is that they're instructed to, as soon as they can, have a year's worth of food stockpiled, right? Help against uncertain times in the future. And so, and one of the things that they store a lot of is wheat. And so there's this big conversation that exists in that community. Well, what am I doing? Should I not be doing the wheat? And I talked to one of their scholars, and it was his opinion that the wheat that was mentioned in the biblical references that the Mormon community rests upon is not the same thing as modern day wheat. It was a completely different grain. And then there was also a conversation about, well, if you sprout it first, right, and then use it, it changes the protein digestibility. You know, so again, these are all areas that need to be investigated, and I don't know the answer to them. But, you know.
All right, so grammar needed. That's well taken. Yeah, more, that's a perfectly fine answer.
Yeah, yeah, but and again, really, right? You know, if I'm a gambler and I want to go to Las Vegas and I had the opportunity to bet on the house, I would always do that because the house wins the majority of the time. Of course, they don't let you do that, right? So I am going to bet when I make a dietary recommendation, a broad stroke dietary recommendation, even though it might not be so for 100% of the people, it's so for the majority. And so I'm going to make that, you know, I'm going to make that determination. I'm going to make that recommendation because for most of the listening audience, it will in fact apply. All right.
Great. All right, Peter, let's get into the vitamins and the vitamin industry. And let's just go through the vitamin list. Why don't you cover the vitamin list? We already covered the minerals. Hit the amino acids and the essential fatty acids. And then let's use the rest of the time to discuss the industry.
Okay. The essential amino acids are valine, lysine, threonine, leucine, isoleucine, tryptophan, phenylalanine, methionine, histidine, arginine, taurine, and tyrosine. Okay. And again, that you've got that list posted, right?
It is posted for the last talk, and I will post it again for this one.
All right. I should probably put a link up for it on my website also. So here we go. Vitamins. Vitamin A, like apple. Vitamin B1, B2, B3, B5, B6. What happened to B4? All right. It's not there. B12. Vitamin C, like Charlie. Vitamin D, like David. Vitamin E, like Edward. Vitamin K. Biotin, choline, flavonoids, bioflavonoids, folic acid, and inositol. All right. Well, those are
the essential fatty acids, gamma linolenic and gamma linoleic.
Right.
And then you've got one other there, which is
arachidonic. Arachidonic.
What's that one?
Arachidonic.
I mean, but what is it?
Yeah, it's a fatty acid which is found in meat. Arachidonic acid. Now,
gotcha.
It's because of the controversy over arachidonic acid. There are some people in the scientific community that do not believe arachidonic is an essential fatty acid. And years ago, when Dr. Wallach was, you know, lecturing and bringing this information forth, arachidonic acid wasn't even on the playing table. So he referred to this conglomeration of nutrients as the Mighty 90, right? Because there were only 90, now there's 91, right, because of the addition of arachidonic acid. So in some of Dr. Wallach's older lectures or older publications, you will hear him talking about the 90 essential nutrients, which he calls the Mighty 90. And that was before the introduction of arachidonic. And, you know, who knows, next year it might be 92. Who knows, right? Science marches on.
Well, you know, if you figure out where B4 went.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's it.
All right. So let's get into this industry. You used to work for one of these companies that provided vitamins only for doctors, and so you've got a background in that.
Yeah.
So a lot of people have accused you guys of wanting to sell vitamins versus, you know, and a lot of people are saying, "Okay, well, I want to just put all of the ash and stuff in the soil and, you know, let's cover all of this stuff to make sure that people are getting healthy and doing the right thing, regardless of whether or not they're buying vitamins or whatever they're doing."
Well, let's put all the cards on the table. I do want to sell vitamins.
Okay.
But more appropriately, I want to pay you to sell vitamins.
All right.
You know, because everybody needs to take vitamins and minerals and essential fatty acids. Otherwise, you're going to suffer and die. So, you know, I took an oath as a physician to end human suffering. And, yeah, you know, don't blame me. Blame God. We can't get this stuff from the food. Now, it costs money to extract this stuff and to concentrate it and to make sure all your quality control things are in a row. And, you know, it's too bad it can't be free. But, hey, that's just life. So I'm not like GNC. I'm not going to, you know, rob you. I'm going to pay you. And this is the only place you can get your stuff for free if you want to. Now, you don't have to do that. You don't have to become a member. But, yes, I want to sell you vitamins. Why? Because you need them. You need them to be healthy.
You hear that, people? Peter was honest and very direct that he wants to sell vitamins. So there you have it. He's upfront about it. No secrecy or anything. He wants to sell vitamins. And why again, Peter?
Because without them, you will suffer and die. Period.
And period. But expand on that, not that we haven't throughout this entire interview and the last one, but expand on that one more time so that they get it.
Okay, so the human body has, in order to be healthy, needs 91 essential nutrients. These are the raw materials that your body needs to maintain its health. 91.
And we read them all this time.
And you can't get them from your food. It's impossible. So what do you have to do? You have to find somebody that has concentrated them and put them together in recipes which are bioavailable, which we have done. So in order to fulfill your body's nutrient needs, you have to secure good recipes of the 91 essential nutrients. Now, I've been doing this for 23 years. I've worked with a number of different vitamin companies. I've seen a number of different vitamin companies, companies that you haven't even heard of because they only sell to physicians. And I have a lot of clinical experience. And, you know, quite frankly, the money that I make from encouraging my patients and people who are not my patients to take Dr. Wallach's longevity supplements is extremely less than I did before. The normal retail markup of a vitamin sale in a physician's office is 100%. You know, so you go to the MD or the chiropractor or the osteopath or the naturopath or the dentist who has vitamins for sale. Here's how it goes. We buy them for $10. We sell them for $20. It's 100% markup. It's a normal retail markup, right? And by the way, sure. I used to mark my stuff up 80%. I never marked it up 100%. But my price point with a longevity sale is 8%. About, more or less. So if I sell you $100 worth of vitamins, I make $8. Now, that's a lot less than 100%. 8% is a lot less. And why do I do it?
Because, well, and the idea is to have build up a large downstream so that when you're getting a lot more of the 8% in the long run.
Yes, that's correct. And that's, you know, that is the business model, correct. And the point is that the reason that I am an advocate of Dr. Wallach's nutritional supplements is because they work. They're more researched. They're better recipes, they're better formulations than anything I've seen, period. And I, you know, I can sell anything I want. I did. And the reason that I use this stuff is because they work, and also because I am 100% enrolled in the mission of longevity, which is to lift people out of pain and suffering, and also to lift people into financial security. For goodness sake, what is wrong with that? You know, for $10, we will teach you Dr. Wallach's health recovery methods for free. We will teach you the methods for free. No doctor's copay, no insurance, no doctor's visit, no insurance copay, no nothing. We will show you how to do it for free, and we will pay you to do it and teach you how to be good at it. And if you don't want to do that, then that's fine.
And by the way, I want to point out to the audience that I had contacted you and asked you for 15 to 20 copies of your book, and not only did you give it to me for wholesale, but you took 20% off of that.
Well, there you go. So, you know, we're not money grubbers, but, you know, it costs money to make this stuff, right? So we can't give it away for free. I wish we could. I wish your insurance paid for it. I wish it did, but it doesn't. So we have to do the second best thing. The second best thing is to pay you handsomely to help us. Okay, so now, last year, you know, I'm standing up on the hill and I am saying that the majority of chronic diseases are caused by nutrient deficiencies, period. And last year in the United States, we consumed approximately $70 billion with a B, dollars worth of vitamins and nutritional supplements, and everybody is still sick. Well, how can these two things both be, you know, true?
Well, what's the story with a lot of people saying, well, vitamins don't work, vitamins aren't proved, which I think is completely bunk, because when it's winter and I live in the mountains, if I don't take vitamin B3 supplements, I feel miserable. So I take three every day and I feel great. Well,
it's
so
like, it's like saying the earth is flat. Again, this is an academic thing. I mean, you can go to PubMed, get an account with PubMed and type in vitamin C and pull up about 750 published research articles just on vitamin C. It's just, a meme put out there to confuse people. Vitamins are proven, minerals are proven to be effective.
And I think that we should also, and this hasn't been discussed at all, but there is a thing called Codex Alimentarius out there where they've been trying to get rid of the vitamins from us being able to take care of ourselves, such as you're doing. So that should be made aware that there is an intentional campaign to discredit vitamins, because one person dies from vitamins, they're going to ban them all, rather than, 100,000-200,000 people dying a year from the MD related medicine. But we got to look out for this one person who died from taking too much whatever it was.
Yeah, and again, I want to give Dr. Wallach some props here, because there's the law that prevents Codex from sinking its teeth into the United States economy is called DSHEA. It's an acronym for the Dietary Supplement Health Enforcement Act, or something like that. And it is the law on the books in the United States which draws a line between the pharmaceutical companies and vitamins. It is the law which allows us to go to the health food store and purchase as many vitamins as we want without a prescription. All right? It's called DSHEA. And that law was put there in large part because of the action that Dr. Wallach took. Dr. Wallach was a significant player in the adoption of the Dietary Supplement Health Enforcement Act, which allows us to buy vitamins without a prescription. Wallach also has sued the FDA 8 times. He has sued them 8 times to secure something called a qualified health claim. And, when the detractors of Dr. Wallach stand up, they never mention that. They never mention he sued the FDA 8 times. They never mention that he was one of the guys responsible for DSHEA. They never mention he's been published 70 times. They never mention that he eliminated an epidemic disease in China called Keishan's disease. They never mention any of this stuff. They just say, oh, he's trying to make money selling vitamins. Guess what? He doesn't make any. Period. But, don't get me started. Okay, so here's the deal with vitamin quality control. The reason that we took $70 billion worth of vitamins last year and everybody is still sick is because of the recipe. With vitamins, the recipe is everything. If you had a sinus infection and you went to your local doc in the box and they told you needed 30 milligrams of an antibiotic 3 times a day, right? Oh, life is good. 30 milligrams 3 times a day. Okay. If you took 10 milligrams twice a day, it wouldn't work. Now, does that mean antibiotics don't work? No, it just means you didn't take enough. It is exactly the same with vitamins. Vitamins are a dose-dependent phenomenon. If you don't take the right ones, or if your body can't absorb them, or if you don't take enough, they're not going to work. And, that's what happens. So let's talk about calcium, okay? A typical calcium supplement at the health food store, let's say calcium citrate, all right? It says on the label, calcium citrate, 500 milligrams per capsule. Well, that's great. The RDA is 1,200, so you figure if you take three, that's 1,500 and life is good. Well, not so much. Because in one 500 milligram capsule of calcium citrate, there is approximately 200 milligrams of calcium and 300 milligrams of citrate. Your stomach cleaves the bond, that chemical bond, liberating the calcium. All right, but only if the acid is strong enough. Most people's stomach acid isn't strong enough to do that. So now you've got 200 milligrams. You thought you had 500, but you only have 200 milligrams of available calcium. Well, not so much. Because calcium citrate, if you're lucky, is from 40 to 65% bioavailable, depending on whether it's been chelated or not. So let's cut it in the middle. Let's say it's 50% absorbable. Right? So 50% of 200 milligrams is 100 milligrams. That means in order to get the RDA, you need to take 12 a day. Most people take 3. And that's why everybody is still sick. And that's why Sally Field can go on TV and say with a straight face, I got osteoporosis even though I took my calcium. Well, you stupid twit, you didn't take enough. That's like me saying, oh, yeah, I tried to put that fire out in my backyard with water. It didn't work. Neglecting to tell you I used a squirt gun instead of a hose. But nobody knows this. You know, the person at your health food store doesn't even know this. They're not aware of these distinctions, and they're extremely important, right? Now, that's one thing, the whole dose thing. And, you know, the molecular form of the, you know, is it calcium citrate? Is it colloidal calcium? Is it metallic calcium? Are there cofactors? Is it a hard-pressed tablet? Is it a liquid? Is it a hard-pressed tablet with a gel, with a shellac coating? Is it a gel cap? What the heck is it? There's all these variables which will make that particular supplement bioavailable or not. You know, and then you have to figure out the dosage. Yeah, okay. So now, if we put all that off to the side, there's a whole nother problem that exists in the vitamin industry. And Ralph Nader, bless his heart, figured this one out 25 years ago. Nader sent investigative journalists into health food stores in California, and they randomly took vitamin supplements off the shelf. They took them to a lab, and they tested them. 9% of what they looked at had nothing in it. It was filler. There was no vitamin C. There was no ginkgo biloba. It was just filler. 12% had less than half of what the label claimed. So, you know, it said 500 milligrams per cap. Well, it had 200. And so forth and so on. So the regulations which are in place in order to guarantee that the supplement actually meets the label claim are lame. And there is a big supply chain, baby, from the person, for instance, who extracts the vitamin C, you know, from the orange or from the cactus or from wherever they get it, from the person who extracts the vitamin C to the final product on the shelf. You know, there's all these intermediary steps. There's shipment problems. I mean, what was the stuff put in? What kind of a container was it shipped in? What was the heat of the container? What was in the container before you put the vitamin C in it? What was the quality of the plant that you extracted the vitamin C from, right? All of these things can go wrong along the supply chain and often do. And vitamin companies, rather than keeping stringent control along all aspects of the supply chain, don't, because if they did, it would cut into their bottom line. So, for instance, most vitamin companies, let's say I'm a big vitamin company, and you know, I sell a million bottles of vitamin C a year, right? Most vitamin companies will do something called skip lot testing. So they buy big 20 kilo drums of vitamin C from their supplier 4 times a year, right? Every quarter they buy a big 20 kilo drum of vitamin C powder. Rather than testing every batch of vitamin C powder for purity and for authenticity and for potency, they do something called skip lot testing. So instead of testing all 4 batches, they're going to test 2 of those batches randomly, because it costs way less money to do that, and the government allows them to do that. So that means that 50% of the raw material that they're not testing could be contaminated, could even possibly not even be vitamin C, or, you know, could be grade F vitamin C instead of grade A, and they won't know. And if they don't know, you don't know. This is a big problem. So, you know, I got a stick up my rear end about this 15 years ago. And one of my colleagues did also. His name is Rick Leva. He's a naturopath, and before he was an ND, he was a pharmacist, and he really took this ball and ran with it, and he created a vitamin company called Vital Nutrients, and they only sell to physicians. And Vital Nutrients' entire claim to fame was that they had better quality control than anybody in the industry, because they tested, you know, they had a structure in place to test this supply chain. Nobody else did, right? Well, a couple of companies came up. They really raised the bar in the industry. And a couple of other companies came up and met them. But my point is that just because it says, you know, there's 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C on the label, there might not be in the capsule. And there's nobody policing that industry the way that it needs to be policed. And it's a problem. So, you know, I had to do my due diligence. So I checked all these vitamin companies. I sent them questionnaires with all of this stuff. They had to prove to me, you know, their supply chain quality control methodology, right? And there were three companies that passed my test: Vital Nutrients, Metagenics, and Youngevity. And guess what? Metagenics was just bought by Amway. Go figure. So when you're going to spend good money on a nutritional supplement, you have to be sure that it's a good recipe. You have to be sure that the company that manufactured it has excellent quality control. And finally, it has to be bioavailable, and you have to know the dosage, right? And if you're not, if you don't have any of that stuff dialed in, it's probably not going to work, and then you're going to get frustrated, and you also will think, oh, those vitamins don't work. And you know what? You're wrong, because if you take enough of the antibiotic, and it's specific for that bacteria, it will work, but if you don't take enough of it, it won't work. It's exactly the same with vitamins, and this is what we need to dial in.
You know, and I've noticed on, you know, not just at wintertime taking vitamin D3, but whenever I start feeling a cold coming on, if I take 5 or 6 thousand IU of D3 and a few vitamin C capsules, I notice within 2 or 3 hours usually, I almost feel pretty normal that the cold is gone.
Yeah. I mean, and that, right. And this is, that's an excellent point, Jan. And, you know, that experience is what drives my profession forward, you know, because it's a, you know, it's a new idea, right? It's really a very, very old idea that the pharmaceutical, you know, coalition knocked on its ass, right? This notion that your body can fix itself if you just give it everything that it needs, right? To this culture, to this society at this time, you know, in the 21st century, this is like a revolutionary idea, you know, and it's like people are loath to accept it. And the only thing that keeps my profession afloat is effectiveness, you know, and that's what I ground myself in, is clinical effectiveness. And by the way, folks, if you're going to, if you secure the services of a healthcare professional, and I do not care who it is. I don't care if it's the Surgeon General of the United States or a shaman in Brazil, right? You need to demand from them a time frame inside of which you will work to see improvement. And if they don't give it to you, you should move on and go to see somebody else. And if you get to the end of that time frame and nothing's happened, you need to abandon that therapeutic and go somewhere else. But we don't do that in this country. We had strong...
The definition of insanity is repeating the same thing over and over, expecting new results.
That's right. And we get strung along and strung along. And the greatest thing about properly applied medical nutrition is that it's as predictable as gravity. It works all of the time. And so you take the stuff in the appropriate amounts, you feel better. You stop taking the stuff, you feel worse. It's that simple. And this is really the engine, the phenomenal engine that drives this entire train forward, right? And I can't tell you how exciting and rewarding it is to watch people recover from, you know, high blood pressure and type 2 diabetes and fibromyalgia, and, you know, their lives are changed and forever. And it's a beautiful thing, man. And it's what gets me out of bed in the morning.
And, you know, and all those people out there that want to go into medicine, they should consider ND instead of MD.
Yeah, quite frankly, you should. But more to the point, it's much easier if you really want to produce social change. A much more effective way would be just to become a Youngevity member. Because, you know, I mean, I've been a naturopathic physician for 23 years. And since I've been following Dr. Wallach's method, I don't even know what planet I'm on anymore, because the things I've seen people recover from, I didn't think you could recover from that. Wallach has it dialed right in because of that massive amount of research that he did years ago. His therapeutics are way more effective than anything I've ever seen. And, you know, look, let's be honest. If I have a good year in private practice, I can treat maybe 350 people, new people. That's it. There's only so much time in the day. You know, we're not like acupuncturists who can treat 20 people at once. We can't do that. There's only so many hours in the day. 350 people. Well, that's better than nothing. But if I develop a longevity business and teach people Dr. Wallach's method, and they teach people, and they teach people, it's unlimited the amount of people I can help. And that's why we do it. That is exactly why we do it. Because I am not exaggerating when I say this. We are attempting to change the way that medicine is practiced in the United States by creating a grassroots coalition of the informed. And that's what gets me out of bed in the morning. And it's a pleasure to finally, after so many years, meet a kindred spirit, you know, such as yourself, who also understands the importance of these issues and who is also willing to stand up in front of the world and, you know, potentially take one on the chin for the cause. So, you know.
Oh, well, I took a few, but here we are again, and we're you know, see, and that's the nice thing about the Trivium is I can spot the fallacies. I can, you know, when people are providing me the sources and the information I need to check and go in and provide more information, I know that I can verify this information through my five senses, and that's doing the grammar, the who, what, where, when. And as long as that's done, I'm all for it. But, you know, these people that want to put their logic first and cause damage to people and make money, all this irrational Kantian nonsense going on out there, I have a problem with that.
And you should. And, you know, so you know, tomorrow's another day.
Indeed. And what is the single most important concept that you would like people to take away from this part two of your interview with Gnostic Media?
The single most important concept would be that it's not what you don't know that will hurt you. It's what you're absolutely sure of that just ain't so. Right? Yeah, I think that's a quote from Will Rogers or Mark Twain, one of the two. The human body has nutritional needs which are impossible to be met through food. You can't do it. So in order to optimize your health, you must secure the 91 essential nutrients and ingest them every day in the proper amount and dose for your body. And when you do that appropriately and stop eating the food that is harmful to your body rallies and fixes itself. And your body has a built-in ability to fix itself. The only thing it needs to accomplish that is the correct raw materials. So, you know, take your supplements, ladies and gentlemen. I don't want you to believe me. I want you to trust me. Trust me enough to try it, for goodness sake. But like the fella said, the proof of the pudding's in the eating. And, you know, it's my job to help everybody live long, healthy, prosperous lives. And anything I can do to help, I'm here for you.
And again, your website, contact information, and book.
Okay, website. My last name is Glidden, just like the paint, right? No relation. If you forget to spell it, just watch a TV commercial and just put a doctor in front of it. You can either spell that out, D-O-C-T-O-R, or just D-R. It's drglidden.com. That's really easy. And all my contact information is there as well as my book, which is called The M.D. Emperor Has No Clothes. And God willing, by the end of January, book number two will be out, which is titled Healing is Easy. And it's a kind of it's a system by system breakdown of, you know, the real cause of type 2 diabetes and the real cause of arthritis and the real cause of high blood pressure and what you can do about it without the help of your MD. Bless his heart.
Great. And thank you so much, Peter. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Jan. Always. Let's keep up the good fight. And thank you so much for the megaphone. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.